Welcome again to the Cannabis Investing Podcast, where we speak with C-level executives, scientists, and law and sector experts to provide actionable investment insight and the context with which to understand the burgeoning cannabis industry. I'm your host, Rena Sherbel. Hi again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Happy December. It's great to have you listening. Really exciting news. This is our 100th episode of the Cannabis Investing Podcast. That would not be possible without you listening to this show, giving us feedback, making us better, giving us ideas. Really, really happy to be building this community of cannabis investors and interested parties, and really, really appreciate you listening to the show and supporting us, and really proud to bring you today's episode with Alvaro Torres, co-founder and CEO of Chiron Life Sciences, which is a vertically integrated, medically focused cannabis company focused mainly in LATAM, the Latin American markets, Colombia, Mexico, more markets even than that, also in Europe, Germany, the UK, also some North American operations, but primarily looking to be the, you know, big name in LATAM and Europe come a few years down the line when those medical markets are more developed. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about on the show recently about U.S. cannabis companies, a lot about MSOs, the multi-state operators, those companies with operations in multiple states, with tentacles in many markets, growing, their share prices skyrocketing. People listening to this, if you're invested in the market, if you're thinking about being invested in the market, I can't blame you. The share prices are really going through the roof. A lot to be excited about. Some of the companies we've had on months ago are just doing gangbusters right now. It's super exciting to be a part of this market for sure. But then you have companies in other markets that are just getting started or laying the groundwork to just get started. Places like Israel, places like LATAM, places like Europe. You know, there were a lot of fits and starts in terms of growth. Lots of, you know, projections about Europe and Germany in particular. We're going to talk about Israel in a few weeks. We have an episode coming up about that. But today we're talking about LATAM and Europe mostly, which is what Chiron is focused on. And Alvaro gets into why they are staying the course in those markets, why it's so exciting. Mexico going adult use, and Alvaro talks to us about whether or not they'll get into that side or focus on the medical side, about the high margins of the medical side of things, the importance of having and sticking to a long-term vision, which is what, you know, Alvaro and Chiron are really doing, sticking to a long-term vision and envisioning what's going to be in a few years with Chiron at the top of that board in terms of those markets. And Alvaro gets into those numbers, talks what it means to raise capital in this environment, the deal that they just did with Canaccord, talks to us about his feelings about share dilution, growing responsibly, what he defines as growing responsibly, how he sees growing the company and his philosophy. The tremendous board that Chiron has is very exciting. They've made a slew of recent really nice announcements that I imagine make investors feel good about their investment. I, for one, am an investor in Chiron. I was on their investor webcast yesterday. A lot to like about this company. So excited to get you this conversation with Alvaro, and hope everybody is doing well out there. And again, appreciate you getting us to 100. Here's to the next. And before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice of any sort. And in my model cannabis portfolio, I am long Trulieve, Chiron, Grow Generation, Curaleaf, Vireo Health, and Isracan Biosciences. You can subscribe to us on Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. Alvaro, welcome to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Even though we've been already talking for a little bit, welcome to the show officially.
Thank you, Rena. Appreciate it. Very happy to be here.
It's really great to have you here. Really excited to have you on. Really excited to talk about Chiron. It's a stock we've talked about a bit before on the show, and one I know a lot of readers on Seeking Alpha have a lot of excitement about, a lot of opinions about, and also on Twitter, everybody that I kind of follow and is in my little universe is very excited about what you guys have coming down the pipeline. So I'm excited to get to it.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
But I want to start with your journey and your origin story, how you got, what's your journey and how you got to the cannabis industry and how you decided to found Chiron?
I'm an engineer, Rina. So I'm Colombian and U.S. citizen. I went to school in the United States all my engineering life. My family used to own an engineering company. So that takes a lot into the approach I take, very methodic. And that was in 2015. I had my own company doing, you know, financial advice for engineering infrastructure projects. My partners, the two co-founders of the company, they showed me the first draft of the Colombian decree that was, you know, legalizing medical cannabis. That was December 2015. It's crazy how time flies by. And we started reading, and it seemed like a really good, interesting opportunity. But one of the co-founders comes from the pharma world, and we were talking, well, it's great that Colombia wants to get into cannabis. For sure, we have low-cost advantage, for sure. But isn't that the same thing we've done over and over? Like, we grow coffee, and we grow coffee for $1 a pound, and then Starbucks comes and sells it for $5 a cup. We grow bananas, and then Chiquita Banana puts a sticker on it and sells it 10 times higher. So I didn't really want to do anything that had to do with that commodity business. And so we were thinking, you know, from my co-founder's experience, he was before selling Advil. And it's a very similar story because Advil is ibuprofen. You know, it's no longer under patent. Anybody can make it. And yet Advil has 35% market share. So how does one build an approach, a branding approach of a company that sells, let's say, a compound that eventually will be commoditized? And so that's where the entire business plan started. We were thinking about the name of the company, and we chose Chiron. In the Greek mythology, Chiron is the centaur that taught Hercules medicine, and he was the patron saint of pharmacy. So we didn't want to name the company marijuana anything or cannabis anything, because we know, and we knew, and today we can test it, that there is going to be a big wall that we need to bring down on the perceptions of patients for cannabis, particularly in a region like Colombia or Latam that has suffered from all the negative parts of the cannabis, illegal cannabis trade. And so now you're trying to turn this plan that caused so many problems, that is customer has caused, and you're trying to turn it into something positive. And we say, well, we're in a region of Latam, 660 million people. There's a big opioid industry in Latam, $4 billion a year. And this seems like the right product that can become that new medication. But if we focus on brands and consumers and patients, that's going to be more sustainable. And we're going to stay away a little bit of that conversation of the B2B business because we don't want to be growing coffee. So that's where the entire thing came on. We started, that was in 2016, for a year traveling. I just told you, Israel, Canada, trying to understand how this business worked. And then, you know, I met another partner of mine who told me, let's go to Canada, raise capital there. And we want to be the leading medical cannabis company in Latam, focused on patients. That's a unique story because most of the people are out of Colombia and the rest, you know, they want to cultivate for others. And that's a viable business model. But for us, it was something about more about patients. So we think about patients, we think about prescriptions. We don't really think in grams and square meters. So that's the origin. And being an engineer, I didn't know anything about cannabis, but you learn. And you learn by doing, and you learn by making mistakes, and you learn by, but certainly for us, the objective of the company has never changed. And today I'm happy that we stayed on that route and that we're seeing those results. So now it's very exciting.
And talk about what that means to focus on the medical side of cannabis. Because, you know, a lot of people that we talk to on the show are focusing on adult use and the medical side, or even more on adult use and the medical side. And then some people that we talk to that focus more on the medical side talk about how, you know, there's higher margins involved, and also how they can connect to the patients. And also it's a more holistic system in terms of, you know, kind of teaching and educating. And with you guys, you're also bringing on physicians into that component. So talk to me about that, focusing on the medical side of things and that decision.
Well, I think it starts also with the fact that Colombia's regulation, where we are here, I'm here in Colombia today, is only focused on medical. And most of the older region in Latam, except with Mexico, is very focused on medical, so it really wasn't like there's a lot of choice to go into recreation and adult use. And I guess from a point of view of 3 years ago, this sounds soft, but I'm already Colombia. We already have the stigma. Why don't we try to change it a bit? No, everybody expects us to sell weed. Why don't we sell medical cannabis? And that's a big conversation. So we start with the medical part, and it's always going to be about doctor education. And I know those two words sound very, very used. Everybody talks about doctor education. Everybody's training doctors. And sometimes, I guess, for investors, everybody thinks, when is that going to pay off? But you have to remember that most of the doctors have been trained for 40, 50 years without that, and trained on opiates. And with all the evidence that we see on opiates, they still prescribe it because that's what they've learned. So breaking that mold it takes time, but once those barriers start to go down, it's very exciting to see the doctors looking at new alternatives. I do think that the medical market is a lot more better margins, but it's because you're trying to bring value to that patient and to that doctor. And that value comes in the form of education, it comes in the form of data, and it comes from the form of product relation and product development, right? And so, yes, you use a lot of those margins to continue to invest in marketing and branding and doctor education and access and telehealth and all these things that we do. But the way I think about things, it's, we are in very early stages. I know everybody is always very anxious because we want to see results fast. But I think one day the pharmaceutical companies will really want to tackle this industry. And when they get into this, they're not going to get into this because of how many square footage one has for cultivation. They're going to get into this because they want to see how many patients do you have, how much demand have you built, what is the R&D pipeline that you've developed. And, that's the big, let's call it the big payoff. Now that's when pharmaceutical companies start really looking and investing into this. And that's what we need to build while these guys wake up to these facts. And so medical is, of course, is tougher because you have to do a lot of education, a lot of convincing. Certainly, if you look at the States, it's tougher than selling, let's call it a THC gummy bear. But we have to understand that the realities of our markets are that recreational is not available yet. And even if it is, it's still going to take some time for the actual regulation to come down. And even if it opens, I would say the medical side is a very big business, and pharmaceutical companies don't sell heroin. No? So there's a big niche market for that. And we're in a region that is not really contemplating recreation. And even if they did, like Mexico, you have to tackle that approach differently because in my opinion, you always have to think about value added. How do you add more value to the products? This is not just about selling pot on the streets and getting people to smoke it because anybody can do that. So I think the end, when the closer you want to get to that consumer, that patient, the more difficult it is. But I think the more value you will produce for shareholders and the more value you produce for them, that's where the company will really grow and have sustainability, which is very important. Like anybody can make $1 million a quarter, but you have to make them every year, every quarter, and grow. And you can only do that if your base of patients is growing or consumers. You create that brand loyalty amongst a sea of Red Ocean. No, but everybody wants to sell the same product. So how do you differentiate yourselves? I think that starts from very early in the company, and it takes some time. But you build those foundations. 3 years from now, we'll find ourselves in a position that we have our patients, we have that loyalty, we have that brand, and every day is going to cost us less to keep building that brand.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think now we're at the time of like this cannabis investing cycle where we're starting to see the companies that have laid those strong foundations. I mean, if you're talking about on the adult use in the US side, like those companies, their share prices are skyrocketing. The ones that are doing well are, and it's easy to see that. With you guys, it feels like because it's the LATAM and the European markets, which have more room to grow and kind of more runway, and also because it's a focus on the medical markets, but it feels very much like what you're building has these like really entrenched roots. And when you're talking about like patients, that's an entrenched, base. Those people are going to stay with you if they like your product and they like what you're offering and the whole ethos of what Chiron is. How much do you feel like you concentrate on the long term versus the short term? Like, do you guys have only your eyes on like, okay, this is our goal, you know, these steps for furthering our growth in South America, in Europe, as the laws start to get easier and more accessible? Is that the focus more than any short term kind of markers?
Well, that's a very good question, Rina, because I am a long term thinker. And that's why I told about my background in engineering. You want to build a skyscraper, you better know what it looks like. And then you build the foundations, and then you put the glassing, and then you put all of these things. Of course, sometimes we could do better in the short-term thinking. And sometimes you want to do things that, you know, may appeal to people because, right, it's short-term and we need to see results today. But I found also that the more long-term value that we can think about, and how do we build that big skyscraper with those same principles. The problem with that long-term value is that there's a lot of things we can't control, right? So regulations, a lot of these things don't happen overnight. And so you have to wait. And that waiting game is sometimes, you know, frustrating. But when I go back and see what we're building, and you start talking to the patients that we've been servicing, and you see patients that are real patients that are saying, well, I used to take 4 shots of morphine every day, plus fentanyl and OxyContin to survive. Now, today, I don't use fentanyl and OxyContin. I reduce my morphine by half, and I'm using one-on-one CBD and THC, your product. You're thinking, well, it may take some time. We have to probably adjust a little bit better to show better results in the short term. But, you know, I believe in long-term investing as well. So those two things are hard to sometimes to manage. It's easy to think about short-term results if you're thinking long-term. It's very hard to think about long-term if you're thinking about the short-term results. Of course, I think the pandemic has also brought a lot of challenges for that short-term. So it's harder to try to get things as fast as the rest of the markets. But again, I look at myself in what 3 years look like, and it's all exciting. I mean, if you look at the U.S., you were talking about USA companies, right? And everybody's doing great, particularly all these who are vertically integrated. But they didn't start 3 months ago. They started 5 years ago, right? So do we have 5 years more to think about what's going to happen in LATAM or in Europe? I think, for sure, these companies are showing us that vertical integration works. They're showing that quality works. They're showing how to build a brand, but they weren't built overnight. And we forget about that sometimes because we think, well, these guys are skyrocketing. Yeah, well, 3 years ago, they were not. But they started sales. Everybody starts with 100,000, 1 million, 20 million, 50 million. I think the question is, can you sustain that? And do you have a strategy to sustain? So it is frustrating sometimes for the short term, even for myself. But when we look at what's really driving the company, I can see only patient growth. And that patient growth is going to be very sustainable with good margins, brand loyalty. And, you know, 3 years from now, we'll be thinking, well, you know, 2020 was tough. But Jesus, thank God we stayed the course, because otherwise, you know, it's, as I said, it's easier to make $1 million sales in a quarter. If that's your objective. Can you do it next quarter? The next quarter after, you grow 20%. So I think that's the challenge. But and I think everybody that works in this company, even some of our biggest shareholders, they appreciate the fact that we're thinking long term, and we'll be all grateful about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just a couple hours ago, you were on an investor webcast that I was on, and you guys mentioned, I'm not sure if it was you or somebody else mentioned Trulieve and what they've done in Florida. And I think even this year, when Trulieve has been doing so well, like it's evident that they're doing so well, even people are like, oh, why aren't you expanding faster? Why aren't you taking on more? Why are you focusing more on Florida? You know, and we've had Kim, the CEO, on a few times, and she says like about staying true to your mission. And it does seem very much like what you guys are building in LATAM and in parts of Europe as well.
Well, I think that's a great point that you're bringing in. I think your answer is spot on. When we talk about all the noise sometimes that comes down, you're thinking cash conservation, but growth. Those are two dynamics that don't necessarily play well together, no? So are you growing or are you conserving? If you want to grow, it's because you're thinking about the future. And we all know, whoever's in this business doing great, because you have to work hard to get more patients, more customers. Every day, I'm sure they also think about new promotions, new strategies. Where do I open a store? Is it the right place? But if you don't stay true to that, of what you want to do, I think, my opinion at least, you may have good short term, but then the crash will be a lot bigger. And, you know, I'm also here to build wealth for everybody, investors, myself, and, you know, we think about that way. Of course, we can do a lot better. That's always. But I think the moment I go back and say, I'm going to change my business model, I think people would be very disappointed, particularly the patients who are saying, what do you mean? You've been advocating all of these. You've been serving. Why? Because you want to sell 1 kilo at 10 cents. So, you know, we have to be disciplined. And I think discipline takes time. You know, we have to weather on.
So let me ask you, you mentioned Mexico and they might go adult use legal. I don't know what your thought is there, like how quickly that might happen. If they do and when they do, would you guys get into that side of the market or you would strictly stay on the medical side?
So that's another very good question. So Mexico's already signaled that they are legalizing adult use. And that's already a decision by the Senate. Of course, they're also creating a new institute for cannabis. They're creating all these new rules that I think are going to take some time to actually implement. But, you know, I think if you look at the future, you're thinking a country like Mexico legalizing all of it and doing it, I think, right, it's going to take some time, but it's a huge opportunity. Now, as to whether we will get into that, I can only say that the dynamics of every country are different. No? I would certainly not be interested in seeing how much flower we can sell on the recreational market because there's already enough out there in Mexico and, you know, enough actors of all types to be competing against that, right? I think the medical market in Mexico makes a lot of sense. It's a big country. More than 12 million people need this medication. And because they are going to make the distinction of, you know, flower extracts, the sooner we can start getting into those conversations, I think the market will be big. And as you know, I don't know if you know this, but in Canada, North America, maybe even in Israel, the percentage of people that have ever tried marijuana in Canada or United States is more than 50%, no? But in LATAM, even Mexico and Colombia, it's less than 10%.
What?
That means that
I did not know that. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Well, this is the interesting part. Like, Colombia produces, let's call it 200 tons a year of illegal marijuana. Sadly, Mexico produces 500 tons a year of illegal cannabis. But that's not for local consumption, you know. That's for, you know, the Americans and the Canadians are taking that. And those numbers are going down because, you know, all these countries are legalizing. But my point is that we are in a society that's very conservative, very Catholic, very religious. Marijuana or cocaine or all these uses domestically is not as prevalent as it is in the United States. And that means that even for medical cannabis, breaking those walls is difficult. And so that's why all this medical education matters. And my point on that is, no, it's not. I don't see that it's going to necessarily be the same way as in Canada, where there's going to be a lot of cannibalization. I see a lot of very segmented on illness and age groups who want to get into this and the other ones who want to really get better by their doctor's prescriptions. I think it's still going to take some time, at least for the recreational adult use, while they figure out all the administrative process that they have to do. Medical for sure is happening, I think, a lot quicker because they've been thinking about it more. But, you know, I think those two will live together. I don't think we are right now at the point that we can be interested in that just because also our shareholders or our stakeholders, we include doctors and patients, not sure how they would look upon that. We've been so advocates of medical cannabis. But, you know, I think medical cannabis is a huge industry in LATAM. And so, you know, there may be strategies for others, but, you know, we have to see yet because they don't even know yet distribution, what type of products. And just to give an example, let's suppose that they regulate it and they do, I mean, they already approved it, but a big decision they have to make is are the products with THC, let's say gummies, do they have to be approved by the Mexican FDA? Let's say they say yes. That's a very big process. You know, in the States, none of these products are FDA. Right? So once the United States legalizes, the big question I think is for everybody is, are they going to mandate those products to be FDA approved? And that's a big question. And if they do that in Mexico, that means that quality will matter. That means it's not up for grabs for anybody who just throwing wheel on the side. So we still don't know. But I think it's very exciting anyways for both markets.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really interesting point because like the FDA, once you talk about bringing the FDA in, you know, I mean, the whole thing with legalization, it's such a huge beast. Like it's not so simple as like, oh, now it's legal and everyone can partake. It's a, you know, it's so many different moving parts. And that's interesting because how the FDA has dealt with CBD has been extremely like, you know, a long process and complicated and here and there. And so that's an interesting point to bring up. I wanted to stay for a minute about LATAM. I'm interested in what you said about, like, we talked at the beginning about all these preconceived notions about Colombia and LATAM countries in terms of drug cartels and this crime. And, you know, that's how people think of certain parts of the country. Do you feel like there's more resistance to accepting cannabis because people think of it as a drug, or they don't want to think of it as, you know, they want to get away from being part of that stereotype? And B, I think my next question would be, do you feel like a certain empowerment or mission as a Colombian kind of trying to change the face of what cannabis means?
Well, Rina, I think on A, yes. Let's talk about Colombia, where it's the first country that we started. The misconceptions of the population here are big. I mean, when I started 3 years ago, even my mother was surprised. Like, honey, I didn't know you smoked marijuana. Like, I don't. I just want to do a business like this. So there's been a lot of that breaking down of that perception. Today, if you go to Colombia, there's probably an article on cannabis at least once a day in every major newspaper. 3 years ago, we couldn't get into the door. And it's all about education of people. You know, and what is THC? What does it do? What doesn't it do? And it takes time. And even today, we have to fight a lot and continue to break those molds. But it is happening faster and faster in the general population. For patients, I would say that the first thing that our first patient, March 19, is fear of the unknown. No? So let's say my doctor sort of knows what they're doing. I don't know how I'm going to feel. What is CBD? What is THC? What if I feel X or Y? And you have to, you know, hold hands. And this is the way we're going to do this. And we'll call you in 2 days. And let's see how it works. And then if it works, why don't you give us your testament to your testimonial and start talking to more patients? And it's something that is snowballing more. As you know, in Colombia, we have our own clinics, so we're vertically integrated. And so we're lucky that we can manage our patients, have our own doctors, and those doctors are learning to prescribe. But even within our doctors, you know, I cannot force the doctors to do anything they don't want to do. They require a lot more evidence. So, for example, everybody knows, or they can read all the papers on medical cannabis. But that step from reading all the technicalities and then going into your first prescription, that small step is more like a Golden Gate Bridge. So, but the more you break that barrier and then you start showing them the evidence, to say, hey, after 3 months, we have 94% of our patients are feeling much better. And that starts my world. So this is working. That's why I feel that this is a snowballing effect. And we have to take that snowballing effect outside of our clinic, talk a lot more, present more papers, do a lot more research. But I do sense today that we talk about cannabis in the streets and people are saying, oh, I'd like to try that. But maybe a year ago, everybody would say, you know, get back, Satan. But it's a matter of perception. And it's working more. And I, just to give you an example, my mom, she and my dad, they use it now for sleep. Right? So 3 years ago, they're like, why is my son getting to this? But now, no, people realize that they need to sleep. They don't want to be hooked on morphine. And there's an alternative that if you are holding their hands, if you're talking with the doctor, if you're doing that extra mile, it makes everything easier. I mean, in my company here, the key word, I think I said it in the webinar, is access. I mean, I think we cannot understate how important it is, because when the patient can find easy ways to get it, that they can go into a prescription, that they can do telehealth, that they can pick it up within the next couple of hours, you start breaking the molds. Even hopefully one day you can come to Colombia. The clinic that we built for medical cannabis, I would say, I know it's ours, so I'm biased, but I would say it's very unique in everything, in the design, in the comfort. Because when I decided, okay, why don't we get the clinic and build a new clinic for medical cannabis? So it's gonna be like anything else, because people are gonna come in assuming there's gonna be two old men with a long beard smoking pot. That's what they assume. We gotta break that mold. We gotta make everything colorful, nice, the service, the quality, the doctors, the chairs, the paintings. So when they come in, they say, wow, I didn't know medical cannabis was supposed to be this way. And then you put telehealth on an app and Androids, and you know, that takes time, but that perception is improving. And then on B, well, I guess, yes, when I started, and even today, I think we have a sense of responsibility as Colombians to change that perception. When I was raising money for the company 3 years ago, everybody was talking about Narcos season one, season two, and season three. No, and I studied in the States back in the 90s and 2000s, so I'm already used to that. And you have to know that you have to fight the perception. And that's why I said to everybody in the company, we have to be more ethical, more transparent than anybody else, because it's already expected of us to cheat, because that's the perception that we've sold intentionally or non-intentionally to the rest of the world, with all the movies that have been played out. But, you know, we have cities like Medellin that used to be the head of the Medellin cartel with Pablo Escobar, big violence centers, and now named the most innovative cities in the world. So, you know, we just got to keep talking about it and try to bring a different perception. And, you know, it's hard to put that mission on the burden of shareholders, right? So you know, you have to balance that. But the more we talk about it, the more Colombia starts to be on the map, the less people start thinking about it. And even today, I don't get many questions about those type of things, right? When I started a company, everybody was worried about security. And can I walk on the streets? Can I bring investors? But I think the beauty of Colombia, just like in Israel, is that once you go there, your perception changes entirely. So it's going to be a long work. But I do feel the responsibility. But of course, you know, we have to balance that with the burden of shareholders. But you know, the more successful we can be, the more we can show that, it can be done. So, you know, I do think that's a duty that we have to as entrepreneurs and Colombians to try to do things. Just the last point on that, I always tell my kids, I have two kids. You know, most people in Colombia back then used to leave the country because of the violence. And my thinking is, if all the good people leave, what's gonna be left here? So we gotta go back and, you know, come back to these countries and do the best that we can and bring different, because that's the only way these countries are gonna change. They're not gonna change from the outside, you know? So when I went to school in the States, I got my first job interview to stay in the States, and I called my dad and he called me and said, do you think I sent you there to change people's lives there? I sent you there to come back. So I was a very young age, but hopefully everybody that's building a business like that thinks the same way.
Yeah, you know, I heard once Bill Clinton speak at a rally here, and he said, you have to fight for the soul of your country. And that's always stuck with me, of all people, but it's always stuck with me in terms of having, you know, it's real. And if you believe in that, you know, you can do like wonderful things if you continue to give back in that way. And really spread change and really like do something. Talk to me a little and talk to listeners about what's going on in Europe. It's a place where there's, you know, kind of the growth has been slower than people might have imagined it would be a couple years ago. Certainly COVID is doing nobody any favors, but especially if you're medically inclined, you know, a medically forward company, that's the place I think to be doing it. Talk to us about kind of what's going on there and where you see it going.
Well, I think I would start, Renata, that I think for me, there's no doubt about the size of the European market for medical cannabis. Germany, UK, and as more countries start to legalize it. It's a big market with a lot of out-of-pocket capabilities for the population, and with a strong health coverage that can eventually start covering cannabis. Everybody's been excited about Germany in particular, right? And I think there's always a news about Germany one day or the second day, and it's very exciting market. It's not growing today as fast as everybody would like it to be, I guess, investors. There's a lot more companies trying to get into the market, as we are as well. Now a lot from Israel as well, where it's probably much closer than us. And then we talk about the UK, but yes, you're right. It's been slower. It's been slower because, you know, that there is a lot of procedures. The difference that people need to understand between the US and Canada and the rest is that, you know, in Canada, they came out with a different regulation. Parallel, sell cannabis by mail. In the US, there's no regulation. It's fairly legal, and everybody's living under that. That's why my point in saying what will happen when they actually legalize it, if that's something we want. In terms of in Europe and LATAM, those are part, those APIs of THC, CBD are part of the medical system.
Yeah.
And that means it's a lot tougher to introduce this product because it's like any other pharma company. And there's rules and there's regulations, and it looks slow. And people are thinking, well, what's the coverage? Are people buying in Germany? But if we look a little bit above that, we see, hey, the German market is growing, and it's growing sufficiently well. And now with COVID, of course, there's going to be disruption in the supply chain. You know, there's now 9/10 less of airplanes flying all over the world. It's much more difficult to take one product even from Israel to Berlin. It's tougher today, but, you know, COVID will go away. 6 months, I don't know when, but it's going to go away, and the patients really do need it. And there is a global perception against opiates. This is not made up. There's people are dying from it, and cannabis is a good alternative for a good co-helper. So, you know, those growths are going to come back and going to keep showing, you know, those 25% digit that we've seen. But I think we also have to try to understand that these markets that are a little bit more evolved and a little bit tougher, you have to have a better value proposition. If you don't have a value proposition, it's going to be hard to compete in these markets. So I am still excited about Germany just because even in the middle of this pandemic, they've been growing. And insurance coverage on a more scale level will happen. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not in a month, but that will happen. And we have to be ready for that. And if you look at the UK, yes, it's still cumbersome, paperwork. But, you know, again, if you're a short-term thinker, you're thinking, well, I wouldn't get into UK just because it's so tough. If you are 3 years thinking, you'll be in 3 years. If we suffer the pains of logistics, shipping, customs, and flour, and all these regulations, in 3 years, we'll be in a dominant position. And wouldn't we want to be in a country that a patient can spend upwards of £150 a month, pounds, not Colombian pesos, not Canadian dollars, pounds a month, and where there were only five companies that actually stuck with it. So in Europe, I think it's about who wants to, you know, stick with it. But it would be hard to say that those are not attractive markets. And it happened slowly, but you saw a couple of weeks ago, the European Union already, the court decided CBD is non-narcotic. That is huge, huge implications, not just for medical, but for the CPG world on CBD. But it's not as fast as people want it, but again, that depends on your definition of time. If you're running a marathon, maybe you don't care about the first 100 meters. If you are a 100-meter dash runner, you don't care about kilometer four. So I think it's a matter of perception, but the companies who stick with it, who have a plan, who have a way to get there, who figure out logistics, who are figuring how to get demand, 3 years from now, people will be talking, oh, there's only six companies there, because the rest just decide to try to look for the short-term solution. And maybe those short-term markets are not going to be there in 3 years. I don't know, but I think we have to stick with it. I think it's a big, big market. We have to be patient. Getting good gains is hard, but 2021, I think, is going to be a different year. We have a lot more possibilities. And just think about March of this year. We were entering all these conferences and all these things on CBD cosmetics and everybody was excited. We put a pause on it for 9 months. So the good part of that is, you know, 2021 is going to look a lot better, even if this lasts a little longer, but countries are getting more used to it. So, but I'm optimistic by nature, but I just see the numbers behind it, and there's no reason why one should give up on that just because it's taking a couple of months longer.
It's a long-term plan. It's a marathon, not a sprint. It's all those things. You got to have patience, and you got to have some vision. And so, speaking of the CBD skincare line, I saw that you guys are getting into Asia, also Hong Kong. Is the goal to kind of see how it goes, and you guys may spread even more globally than you are now?
So our strategy with CBD started with the fact that Colombia has very good regulations, and we could come up with products that were, let's call it, FDA approved in Colombia. And because Colombia has a level 4 World Health Organization entity, right, it speaks to the same levels as the rest. So we launched the product in Colombia, but the plan has always been, can we build a global brand, right? So of course, as I said before, we've been working on getting the product approved in the United States, which it is, in the UK, which it is, in Spain, and then now in Hong Kong. And we are seeing a lot of more possibilities. Of course, in April, when the pandemic hit, we had to make a decision and say, is this the right time to launch a new brand when things are shutting down? So we made, we're going to position ourselves in which markets can we enter. Let's work on all the regulatory things that we need to make sure we can take the product to Hong Kong. You can imagine how tough it is from Colombia, and you know how proud it is for everybody to know, well, it's a cannabis product in Hong Kong out of Colombia, because the quality of the product is very good. We focus a lot on that quality. We focus a lot on the new brand, on the branding of the company, which is on the product, which is focused on women, women for women. So the actually division is run by very talented women in this company. And just be there. I think the next 2 months, there's not much to do except approve it, be there. And once the world is ready again and we are sort of coming out out on the streets, we'll be in a position where we can tackle all these countries in a unified brand. And once we can do that in, let's say, Q2 next year, yeah, we'll have the only global CBD brand in the world, no? Because it's hard to find a product that can sell in all these countries. So, you know, I think it's still exciting because CBD does have properties on the skin. And that's proven. And if you have the right product quality and you have people that love the brand, then it's going to be able to take it elsewhere. It's going to be a lot easier. Now we have to rely a lot on more digital sales strategies, which I think is also great. It's more efficient, but also tougher in a tougher market. Everybody's doing it. But, you know, we have a good product. And I think once these things cool down in Europe, particularly, and in Hong Kong, the market is there. People still need these products. It's not like the world is dying, no? So yeah, we're still having children and we're still growing. Just put a pause on it for 9 months.
Yeah. So is the cannabis that you're sourcing, is that all coming from South America?
So for the medical cannabis products that we're going to sell in LATAM, Mexico, the one that we sell in Colombia, Peru, and Brazil, these are all sourced from our own cultivation. For Europe today, we use a different strategy. We have a third-party supplier in Europe that can provide us with high-quality flower and extracts according to our specifications. We are looking how do we export our genetics, things like that. But for us, I've never been an advocate of having one place to ship to everywhere else, just because I think every country wants their own jobs and their own FDA, foreign direct investment, but also because I believe a lot in building demand. So if we focus on building that demand, we go backwards. What's the right supply chain for that demand? So you know, we are doing it right now in Europe, a third-party supplier with all the qualifications, much easier to ship within Europe. Margins are not the 80% margins that we see in Colombia, but let's build demand and then we go backwards. And as we go backwards, then those margins will improve, but we need to build those patients. We need to be faster. We need to ask them a lot with a lot more speed. And if it takes us to be a little bit agnostic on not necessarily cultivating on our own, so be it. when we started the company and we said with our co-founder, we said, you know, the biggest dairy company in Europe is Danone. Let's call it Danone. And how many cows does Danone own? Zero, no? So how much wheat does SAB Miller produce? Zero. So I think the more we focus on that B2C, we'll have to always apply a balanced strategy between our own and outsourced, because, you know, you have to think about risk and logistics. And, you know, I think our capital is best served today by investing in medical education and awareness, necessarily than building more facilities.
It's interesting. You guys have a really impressive board that, you know, who you started with has been impressive. You just recently added somebody to your board that's impressive. You guys have a real strength in what you're bringing in terms of, you know, business and regulation and the medical side. Where are the genetics? Where are the cannabis kind of experts? Where did you bring them in from?
Well, we started with a lot of advisors from everywhere. From all sorts, Europe, even sometimes Israel and Canada and North America. So I would say that we have, let's call it, two parts of this business. One is understanding the medical purpose of cannabis. And for that, we had contracts with clinics in Canada where we would train, hire doctors, still with us, and we send them to Canada to learn, stay there for weeks and learn how to prescribe, learn the process, come back here, Colombianize it, so to speak, and then adapt to it and grow. And that's what we do in our clinics. Everything we do in our clinics is now really our own procedures, because we learned a lot more about, you know, how do we want to prescribe it. In terms of the cannabis growing and all of that, I got to tell you, it's very lots of trials and errors, because when you start into this business, you think, well, I'm just going to take a seed out of, let's call it, Netherlands, and I'm going to plant it in Colombia, it's going to grow. But seeds and plants are like humans. They adapt differently to different weathers. I remember the first time people went to our site, you know, it's a little bit hotter than what most people are used to. And, you know, the first thing everybody said, well, they're not going to be able to grow here, because we're used to, let's call it, that the Canadian $100 billion facility that everything is controlled. I said, well, no, the way we want to do it is we have to get the plants that are going to be more adapted to this weather in particular. So we register 36 strains, but today, for example, we only cultivate four. They, as we call it, the Goliaths, the plants that are now giving us 2,000 grams per square meter a year. And we have to learn on that. So we did bring all these specialists that were telling us how to grow cannabis. In reality, about a year and a half ago, or 2 years, all the team that was here, we said, okay, we know the theory, but now we got to do it ourselves. So we've been building that know-how ourselves. I think the facility is one of the most beautiful things I have in the company. The plants look great all the time. And it's no longer a concern of mine in terms of the way we grew. Then the second part comes from the extraction, and that's chemistry. Right, so when you start, you're thinking, well, I need to buy a CO2 extractor or an ethanol-based extractor, and that's your first major decision. But as you go along and you have more chemists and more pharmaceutical people, you try to understand how to create consistency. And that's a chemical process, and you can learn a lot from visiting a couple of plants, but it also takes a lot of reading and understanding and playing with it. So it takes time to actually get what you want, but that's what makes your product a particular. We did get a lot of consultations back then. I would say our SOPs are our own now, and we learn to do it on our own in that climate. So as my VP of operations says, we are the best cannabis growers in Doima. We know how to grow it there perfectly. I'm not sure if we could have the same results growing in Santa Marta, because you have the plants need to adapt, and everything you do for the plant is particular to that place that you're growing. So I think you just learn to listen to the plant. They tell you exactly what they need. And in our case, our plants are, even though they're in greenhouse, they are a lot more exposed to the elements, right? So that also gives us an ability to say that, you know, nature takes its course, and, you know, the plants are thriving. That wasn't necessarily the case 2 years ago, no? But you have to learn.
Yeah, yeah. You have to treat it like the living thing that it is. Yeah, it's interesting. People are so down on like cannabis coming from, or some people are down on cannabis coming from LATAM, but I feel like the more you learn about what's going on there, I mean, companies like Chiron are really doing it differently. It's not like your grandfather's preconceived notion of what's happening there. So mm-hmm. I think people need to adapt their thinking also about what's happening there.
Well, I think the problem with LATAM companies that are public, or like most of the LATAM companies, is what we just talked about, is you're expecting very fast results. Why aren't you selling $100 million? And you're looking and saying, well, yeah, we are going to. But, you know, we just started sales 5 months ago. There's no company in cannabis that started doing that 5 months ago when they started. So it's got to be a little bit about patience, I think. But also, you're looking at different business models. And I think there is a very viable business model on that B2B side of selling to other companies worldwide. And for that to be successful, those markets have to be open up as well. And that takes a little bit of time. You know? So I would love to be able to export 10 tons to Germany. But Germany is not that yet ready for those 10 tons. So, I think if you look again, 3 years, 4 years from now, there is going to be a global supply chain of cannabis. I think Colombia does have a sustainable advantage in that because of the weather and the time that it's taken, the quality of the products. And eventually, you know, there will be a lot more demand for this. And the more demand there is, there's going to be a lot more supply, low cost advantage, and for those companies who are focused on that. But it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take some time. If we are willing to look at that strategy and how those markets open up, and there's going to be companies that want to follow that demand, and there's companies like mine who want to build the demand. And those, you know, 3 years, those two will marry, and then we'll be talking about supply chain strategies. But you know, the demand has to be there. And we need to build it, and that's the reality, and that's going to happen.
Yeah,
that is going to happen.
Yeah. Switching gears for a little bit into the financial side of things, you know, obviously the raising capital is more difficult in this environment. Although honestly, it's really always difficult for cannabis companies. Talk to me about like as CEO, how do you think about and how do you envision the philosophy behind keeping cash on hand, expanding, and using dilution as a means to do some things that you may want to do? Talk to me about what you think about that.
Well, we just basically did a financing about 2 weeks ago, 14 million or so, or something like that. The equity we did in a couple of days with Canaccord has been always very supportive of the company. I think right now in the pandemic, we have to think about, and this is maybe not the right analogy or not, but I don't think everybody is going to make it because the pandemic has brought, at least outside of North America, real challenges to the economic developments, even Europe and LATAM and Asia on speed and how do you get to market, right? So when we think about that, we say, okay, so we've been well-funded. We closed last quarter with $14 million, and these opportunities appear, you don't really plan for them. They appear if the market is there, and the market is there for a couple of days. It's not like this window is open for everybody all the time. And we said, well, there's a lot of uncertainty right now, but the biggest uncertainty for me is that we were just talking about that dynamic. I want to open a new clinic in Medellin. And then some people will say, well, do you have the money? Say, yeah, but I need to build it to grow. Yeah, but you know, how about your cash flow? And that equation, we're going to grow and we're going to conserve cash, but we have to grow. Because if we don't do that, then you know, I'd rather just put my money in the bank, close the company, and pay interest. If the objective of the company is just to conserve cash, I think the objective of the company is to grow while being very prudent with the cash that we have. And so when this opportunity arrives, we thought the same thing. we see that our clinics are working. We see a potential of being able to have a lot more clinics all around Colombia and all around LATAM. It's not going to be that, it's going to be in a small format, so we can do it very fast, but we got to do it. And if we have the opportunity to raise capital for that, of course, you know, the dilution always hurts, and particularly me, I'm the co-founder and largest shareholder still. But the price, as again, I said, the price, it's, we want to get to that million patients. And that million patients that can spend $500 a year, that's $500 million of revenue at, let's call it 60, 70% gross margin. And that's a multi-billion dollar company. So should we be concerned today about using our capital to grow? That's the question I give, no? And because it is hard today to raise capital, let's say today or tomorrow, and it's not easy for companies that are not US to do a, let's call it non-destructive capital raises, which you can see a lot more in Canada. But maybe not everybody makes it out of here with the cash that they have and the business plan. So it's like that Forrest Gump movie. The storm is hard and you're fighting alongside Lieutenant Dan in the middle of the storm, but maybe you come back to harbor and everybody's boats are damaged. So I think that's what capital gives us, particularly in these times for uncertainty. And when you have uncertainty, you better have the capital on your bank account. So while everybody's thinking about how do I shrink, we have the opportunity to rethink how we're going to grow. And so I think that's a philosophy of the company, and it's not something you look for. But, you know, we haven't taken any, you know, as I said, dangerous instruments. So we've done it all in equity. And I know sometimes the dilution looks bad and it hurts. But for me, as the goal of the company, as we keep growing it, it's really non-material. We have 150 million shares out. Let's say we keep it that to 150 or let's say 200 the next year or so. We're talking about, you know, $600 million of sales in 2024 because we have a plan how to acquire those million patients. That's $67 a share. So not necessarily I'm going to be punished or not if we don't do the raise and we just keep our cash. So, well, we are conserving cash, but hey, we couldn't grow. So I'd rather talk about growth.
It's interesting. That's like a really good way, I think, of describing what's even happening right now in this shakeout of the industry is like some companies have that foundation that we talked about and are building to grow. And some companies which grew without any roots, without any base, they're shrinking. They're like, yeah, how can we shrink? How can we cut? How can we take this off or sell these parts? Or so I think that's a very apt analogy for what's happening. Alvaro, first of all, I want to thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation from even before we started recording till now. Do you want to leave listeners with anything that you want to say?
Well, Lena, thank you so much for your time. And we had a wonderful conversation before. I would say, again, this is very early stages. We have to look for the companies who have a foundation and a culture. And, you know, we never talk about culture in these companies. We only read the books 10 years after the companies are founded. But those things happened 10 years before. No company is successful that doesn't have a clear way of how to win. And sometimes it takes a little longer. Sometimes it takes pains. Stock market is something that's sometimes hard to manage. But, you know, I believe in the long-term, you know, future of the company. How do we acquire patients? And we just have to keep it going. And the more we can tell the story, the more the virtual world of the stock market will be aligned with the real world. So I think just a matter of time. And of course, we're always working to make sure that we have create more value for shareholders. But I'm also very interested in creating value for patients. The more value we bring to the patients, the more value we'll bring to shareholders. So that's the way we're thinking. I think we're showing those results. And it's great to be in this type, invited by you and be able to talk like this. And thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And hope to talk to you again soon, hopefully in person in one of our beautiful countries. But absolutely. Definitely want to keep in touch. And I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you've been talking all day, so I appreciate it.
No, that's okay. I still have my voice.
Thanks so much for listening to the Cannabis Investing Podcast. Subscribe or follow us on Seeking Alpha, Libsyn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or Stitcher. And we'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other investors find our show. If you have feedback or questions, we'd love to hear from you at rena+canpod@seekingalpha.com. That's rena+canpod@seekingalpha.com. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.